This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome back to BTBN's NBA Team Podcast as we continue our weekly, I guess you could say, countdown to all the teams as we preview them and we try to do about as good of a ranking system as we possibly could do going into the 2015-16 NBA season, which, if you could believe, is actually not too far away. It's just over a month as we're reaching the end of September. I am one of your co-hosts, Andrew Reich, and I'm joined by my co-host, Adam Murray. How you doing?
I am doing good. It's about time the NBA is about to return. The weather is starting to get cold here and where, you know, where temperatures do get cold.
Yeah. Well, my air conditioning is broken, so not only that, the AC in my car is broken too, so I've been taking in all the beautiful ambiance and mother and nature that Louisiana has to offer, which is usually 89 degrees one day and then 60 degrees the next day.
Like, oh man, it's winter. It's 5 degrees colder.
Yeah. No, it's the only, I swear, it's the only place where on Christmas Day you can wear shorts. Unless you're in California.
Unless you're in California, that's just every day. It's 100 degrees.
This is the section we're going to be talking about this time. We already talked about no chance in hell. I mean, obviously, there's not been too much movement. There is the mega moves of Meta World Peace going to the Lakers and Anthony Bennett getting cut or waived by the Minnesota Timberwolves. Has your mind changed? Is there, like, even more than a 0% chance that the Lakers and the Timberwolves would creep up beyond your list if you could think about it again?
No, because they're still at zero, and these guys are at what, like 0.05?
No, I'd be more safe than that. I would actually say over 10%, between 10 to 20% is what I would say for these teams. But do you think that's a little kind?
It is. You're very generous, but then again, you're comparing it to, you know, Philly, who just cut Gerald Wallace, so your two top salaries no longer play on the team. Half your salary cap is dead money. It's like the NFL.
You know what? I'm glad you talk about Philly because, you know, the Philadelphia 76ers are so, like, collectively bad, you know, just on a perpetual level that we just don't even want to, like, talk about them too much. But we did kind of have to skirt by, you know, with our previews, and we forgot to mention the passings of two Philly greats or Philadelphia 76er greats, Moses Malone, Hall of Famer, and then Daryl Dawkins, Chocolate Thunder. Any memories before we get started?
Chocolate Thunder is just his personality. Mm-hmm. It was that was the era where there wasn't many, you know, soundbite driven players, and he seemed to stand out in that. Whereas Malone, he was just a Hall of Famer.
You know what's funny? Daryl Dawkins had the personality, but he didn't really have the stats. If you look at the career stats, I think it's around like 10 points and 6 rebounds, if I stand corrected. Like, it was okay. He would probably have the numbers of a really good reserve, you know, like a Glenn Davis, you know, that kind of a guy. Whereas with Moses, he had a personality, you know. He coined the term fo-fo-fo, you know, meaning that they were going to sweep everybody in the playoffs. It didn't happen, but they got close. But he had a somewhat of a personality, but he was known more for his statistics than he was for his character. He was a very, very humble person. He was a very hardworking man. He didn't look like a million bucks. He didn't look like a superstar, but he played like one.
Yeah. And then again, just on a side note, he completely screwed Maryland to go to the NBA. And
yeah, we talked about that in the one and done section. He was one of the first ones. Him and Bill Willoughby, yeah, they were the first prep to pro type of guys. So God bless Moses Malone and Daryl Dawkins. Rest in peace. Our condolences, obviously, with their family and the NBA family. Everybody was associated with those two. But we are moving on to the currency of the NBA. And this section is called The Outsiders. When I talk about the outsiders, what do you think? Do you think about Hall and Nash, or do you think about, like, the young adult novel that you probably had to read in grade school?
Nope. Did not know it was a book.
You didn't know The Outsiders was a book?
Yeah, The Outsiders is, you know, outside of the NWO and Nash and Hall and Hogan.
There was a movie with Tom Cruise and Emilio Estevez. I can't believe you don't know this.
No, sorry.
If you were in grade school, you had to read at least one of these S.E. Hinton books. S.E. Hinton was the author. One was The Outsiders, the other was Rumblefish, and then the other one was called The Chocolate War. If you were if you're in grade school or high school, you had to have at least read one of those books.
Nope, high school we read a lot of Shakespeare and Chaucer.
Oh, junior. I'm sorry, I'm not that fancy, I'm sorry. I didn't go to Harvard Junior.
that's what we read in high school. My English class was all like we read like a Shakespeare play every year, and that was our English teacher, which she liked. And
yeah.
No, the other English teacher we had, she liked weird, like we read like a couple like European young adult books.
Yeah, now you're giving me flashbacks of my sophomore years reading Grendel and frickin' Canterbury Tales. Thanks a lot, because that was rough times. But no, we're talking about The Outsiders. When we talk about this grouping, me and Adam were just talking about percentile and chances. We're not completely on the same page with that. But I feel like these teams have a very small chance, like Dumb and Dumber type of chance, like a 1 in a million chance. Whereas the ones past that, the five that we had already previewed, I think they have no chance in hell. Like,
they have no chance. This team, you know, these people might be able to slip in as an 8, and as we know, an 8 can beat a 1, and mm-hmm. You know, we've had 8s go to the finals.
Yeah, and I don't think it's a surprise that 3 of the 5 teams are Eastern Conference teams, you know, because they would be considered, you know, outsiders on most planes, but because the East is so bad, they have a little bit of a better chance of making the playoffs, but I don't know. Maybe just because you make the playoffs doesn't mean you're really in the running. You know what I'm saying? There's always that 8 seed that they get in and it's like they don't have any chance of doing anything. So this playoff seed doesn't really matter much.
Yeah, you're just playing for experience at that point. You either have super young guys who benefit.
I'm trying to protect ourselves so that if one of these teams makes the playoffs in the East, we could say, yeah, but we knew they weren't going to do anything anyway.
Well, like I said, you have a young team, or you have a team with a lot of veterans and no first-round draft pick like the Brooklyn Nets.
And that's going to be the first team we're going to be talking about, the Brooklyn Nets. kind of an okay year last year. It wasn't the worst year. They had a losing record, or was it close to a losing record? Was it 42-42?
They were just under, I think.
It was, let me see here. I'm trying to look at my little statistic page here. Fuck it. They were bad. Lionel Hollins came in as the head coach of the team. They tried to turn things around in terms of attitude. It was a very, very slow process. They seemed to turn things around when they brought in Thaddeus Young from that trade with Kevin Garnett. They had a little bit of an improvement. They got the 8th seed after playing really well in the last month of the season thanks to some inspired play from Brook Lopez, who was coming back from an injury. And they got to the 8th seed, they played the Atlanta Hawks, who were the 1 seed, and they played very, very well, shockingly well, if you ask me, even though they lost in 6 games. What was your take on the Nets last season?
It was just, what happened to Deron Williams and just fell off the map, and I guess, just the nagging injuries just killed him.
Well, I predicted that.
The team just was sort of cool. It was, okay, he goes from, you know, all-star to, well, what do we do to... He was sort of doing good as a sixth man, and then we need to find out Brook Lopez was healthy, which is rare, but when he is, very dominant, and Thaddeus Young did help. So like, your team isn't bad, as long as Joe Johnson still, he has a high contract in the league.
Yeah, Williams and Hollins were on the same page. You know, the rumblings from Pierce after he left Brooklyn and went to Washington, he didn't feel like Williams was much of a leader. And then we heard rumblings that Williams and Hollins almost got into a fist fight. You heard that story?
Yep.
So, you know, it was already choppy waters there. He had that one good game where he kind of bailed out the Nets against Atlanta, but I really felt like the guys that carried that team down the stretch were Young and Lopez in the front court. Billy King, the general manager, made that a target to try to keep them in tow, and he did. They re-signed them. Whether they got overpaid or not, you know, Brook getting close to 20, and Thaddeus, I think, getting around 16 or maybe 15, that's up for debate whether they got overpaid. Some people would say that they did. I personally feel like if you have a really good scoring center, you need to keep them at all costs.
Well, that's just everybody's getting overpaid now, so...
Yeah, so par for the course.
you know, with the exception of Tristan Thompson, who's underpaid if he's not a max player. But the funny thing is, like, you know, they've been known just for making bad deals, bad signings. Okay, they might have overpaid for them, but they got a lot of good, cheap free agents.
They did.
That, you know, if healthy, this team might be able to do something.
Well, they did. In order to get a lot of new pieces in, you have to push a lot of them out. You know, we talked about Darren Williams, who basically got released. Mason Plumlee got traded to the Blazers, which was a surprise because I didn't think Mason Plumlee really fell too far backwards his sophomore season. I thought he did pretty well. I guess they just thought they had just enough value from so that they could get some draft picks. They let Mirza Teletovic walk. He had had the lung infection, and then in free agency wound up going to Phoenix. Alan Anderson went to the Wizards, and then they cut Corey Jefferson and Jerome Jordan. But they got, like you said, a lot of additions. They drafted Rondae Hollis-Jefferson in the first round, and then they had another first-round pick, and they picked Chris McCullough, who's coming off of a knee injury, so I don't even know if he's going to be ready yet. Some of the free agents, some of them you like a little more than others do because they're smaller additions, but they're the kinds of additions that can kind of chip in and help you out. Guys like Shane Larkin, Wayne Ellington, Thomas Robinson, Donald Sloan, you know, guys that are kind of career overachievers, except for Robinson. I don't know what Robinson really is, but Ellington, Sloan, Larkin and Quincy Miller, they're all kind of like career overachievers.
Well, you have like Shane Larkin, you know, he wasn't terrible in New York. He just didn't play the system, which nobody played. And, you know, he was young. They got him for nothing. Bargnani, they got for nothing, who put up good numbers and, you know, put up decent numbers in New York. Yeah, disappointment for a number one, but if you get somebody for a near minimum deal, that's a steal. Thomas Robinson, as you said, yeah, he's a huge disappointment, but he's learned to sort of develop himself into that eighth player, you know, which bench guys are very valuable.
I talked about the Magic in the last episode, and I said that I do like the Magic, but if you look at their team statistics, they're just terrible across the board at everything. The Nets are a team where I didn't really like them, and they were terrible across the board at everything, too. You know, pace, they were slow. Rebounding, they were 22nd. Three-pointers made, they were close to last, which is not a shock for a Lionel Hollins coach team, you know, with the grit and grind that he wants to do. But block shots, they were bad. They didn't really – they weren't good at steals. Their field goal percentage was middle of the pack. They were a bad offensive team. What is there that they can really do with the roster that they have now with the additions of guys like Hollis Jefferson and Ellington and Larkin, along with some of the holdovers like Joe Johnson, who they couldn't put together in a trade, Bojan Bogdanovic, Jared Jack, Markel Brown? Like, what can they do with this roster, essentially, that can improve on one side of the court going forward?
Well, Bogdanovic is good, as you've seen. So that's why, you know, they lose to
He's a true Teletovic. Small forward. He's a true NBA 3.
Yeah, so, you know, you had him and Teletovic, whichever one sort of took off. Okay, you keep him. You have a true 3 there. Mm-hmm. Now you have Joe Johnson, who's still, he's still scoring buckets, which is all that matters. And basically what they had was just a team of, like, trades you would make in NBA Live. Like, okay, it doesn't matter. I'm controlling the team. There's no such thing as chemistry. Let's just get 5 all-stars, put them together. They should all be good, right? No. And then, you know, one other thing with Deron Williams, if you have nobody by your side saying, oh man, sorry to see you go, that's not a good sign if everyone's like, okay, now we're all happy you're gone.
Yeah, it didn't feel like anyone ran to his defense when the headlines came out that he was getting let go.
So now you can develop as a team. And you could get, you have some younger pieces, as you said, you like Hollis Jefferson.
Well, he surprised in the summer league because his biggest weakness was that he couldn't shoot the ball, and he showed at least a few signs that he could actually shoot the basketball, and he was working on a shot. Defensively, he's excellent. You know, at least at the college level he was, which shows that he's got great athleticism and that he can cover a lot of ground against, like, one-on-one. I think he's one of those guys who can guard like 3 or 4 positions. If you want him to guard a power forward, he can get away with it. If he had to guard LeBron in a face-up matchup, he could probably get away with it for a couple of possessions. He's one of those kinds of guys. I don't know if he'll be a Jimmy Butler type. You know, Jimmy Butler wasn't the most offensively blessed player when he came in the NBA either. So maybe it's not the fairest comparison, but he reminds me a little bit of Jimmy Butler.
That's a fair assessment, and you know, if you look at Joe Johnson, multiple position player.
What does he have left though?
Joe Johnson?
They tried to trade him to Cleveland, and then Cleveland realized, wait, this is too much money. We can't do this.
Well, yeah. Well, Cleveland, I don't. They probably. I think they forgot they have a salary cap. Mm-hmm. Like, we have nobody to give him back for this.
Yeah, but he's in the last year of a $20 million salary. So
yeah, he's in the last year. But you know, you're not going to cut salary.
Yeah,
next
but Joe.
Year.
But Joe wasn't one of those chemistry ruining type of guys. He's a team player through and through.
He's a team player. He's just going to score his 18 points and, you know, get his 5 assists and 5 rebounds, and he doesn't care who's next to him.
The problem with Joe is that he has these tendencies to get into funks. He gets into a great groove like he did almost all of the 2014 season. And then, like, last season, he just had some stretches for, like, you know, in the month of February and then in the playoffs where he just stinks. You know, he just can't make shots.
Yeah, that's just, I think, just more of a mental, like, he tried, when there's no pressure, okay, but now, all right, now it's playoffs, I need to step up, I need to do this, and he just falters.
What's your opinion of Lionel Hollins? I mean, he got a few criticisms in Memphis that, you know, especially after Jaeger did so well with him after he was gone, saying, you see, the team kind of could run itself, and Lionel Hollins didn't do much, but did you think Hollins has the ability to kind of lay a blueprint in Brooklyn the same way he did in Memphis and try to build them up, or do you think this is just a little bit too much to overcome for him?
I don't think he's anything special. He's just a run-of-the-mill. He's not making anybody better, I think. Mm-hmm. And, like, they're, you know, he just doesn't... I don't know. The thing with Memphis is that team is just sort of built to run on itself. They don't do anything good. They don't shoot threes. It's like, okay, you're just one of the most basic system possible. Just play defense and then try to score easy buckets.
But that's the thing. This is a basic team too, but they don't have that talent and they don't have that chemistry. You know, so, you know, they have to try to find a way to build it. You've had so much turnover in the offseason that you just kind of have to hope that they kind of blend in together really well. I just don't really see it, and that's why we have them on this in this category here.
Well, they were basic because they had no chemistry. That's all you can do is just... You have to sort of run it like an AAU all-star team. Okay, nobody knows the plays, and we all come from different places. Mm-hmm. Let's just run it. Let's just run what we can run.
What can Andrea Bargnani offer?
He can offer stretch five.
And some vines.
And
a
some
lot of
vines.
A lot of funny
he'll
vines.
He'll give you some points.
Yeah.
So if you're looking to, you know, maximize the... I'll say the agility of Thaddeus Young, and if you have Hollis Jefferson on the court, yeah, you can move Bargnani to the three-point line. Okay, now that opens up the whole floor for those two slashers.
Yeah, if there's a guy that overachieved in his career, in my opinion, it was definitely Thaddeus Young. I never thought he was going to be the player he was when he came out of Georgia Tech. You know, Philadelphia, and in Minnesota, he had a death in the family that kind of rocked him a little bit. But after the trade, he really came on in Brooklyn.
Well, in a way, I think people are still waiting for him. Like, why wasn't he better? Mm-hmm. Like, he got that large contract. Like, well, what has he really done? And people are still saying, like, what has he done? Okay, he's good, but, you know, is he anything to write home about? No, not really.
Okay, we're going to move away from Brooklyn, and we're going to talk about we're going to stay in the Eastern Conference, though. We still got two more to go there. And we're going to talk about the Detroit Pistons. This team was, they were sort of a tease last year. It seemed like they were getting somewhere, and then they kind of stopped and started after Brandon Jennings suffered his Achilles injury. After Josh Smith got the stretch provision, what did you think was going to happen with this team?
Well, I thought they were just going to fall. I think everybody just thought, like, okay, that's done. Now going to go into tank mode. Mm-hmm. But then they just did the exact opposite and got better. Went like this big, you know, they went like an 18.
Well, Jennings
run.
All of a sudden became this like passing machine. He was like giving out assists and he was shooting the ball well. It was crazy. Then he tore his Achilles tendon. I don't know where we're at with his recovery. I would assume he won't be able to start yet unless he really, really had a rapid rehabilitation like Kobe Bryant did. I would assume that he either will be a little slow to start if he happens to be ready, or he might not be ready for at least another month.
Oh, he probably won't be back till Christmas, and there will be no need to rush him.
Because they re-signed Reggie Jackson, who they got in the trade.
They went out and re-signed him. They bid against themselves.
You hated that signing.
I didn't think he was that good in Oklahoma City. You have, you know, the two best players on your team, and you're just pouting you don't get your minutes. When you get on the court, you don't do anything special.
What Reggie was doing is that Reggie was doing the Russell Westbrook offense, but he wasn't Russell Westbrook. So he was able to, like, garner together, like, maybe, like, a 20-point game or maybe have a stretch where he averaged about 16 or 17. But the team wasn't very good. They were losing games. I mean, he's not a lead point guard. But he's in a situation now, and he's got the – and he demanded the kind of contract that makes you think, okay, you need to be a starter. You need to play well. Do you think he's ready for that?
I would hope so. Because, you know, Van Gundy has a plan. He's gotten rid of all the, you know, Greg Monroe leaving, and then he got rid of the two old guys. Mm-hmm. You bring back all these questionable, you know, to some, questionable people. And that's like, but it's his, he has a vision, and he's going for it.
They were 32-50, last in the Central Division. And, I mean, the Central Division, we talked how loaded it was going to be, and it did. You know, Indiana was like a game short of the playoffs, and Milwaukee, Chicago, and Cleveland all made the playoffs. So they were in a tough spot anyway. We talked about how history had said that Stan Van Gundy never has losing teams, and he finally has had one. Do you expect him to have another losing team?
Oh, yeah. They're another year or two away from doing anything. This isn't a quick fix project. They have a lot of garbage to clean up in Detroit that just, you know, piled up real quick.
They made a few moves. I don't know if Greg Monroe would be considered garbage, but I did feel like Greg Monroe was sort of a square peg in a round hole. I felt like he wasn't really a good fit there with Van Gundy. I felt like he didn't – I didn't think he meshed well with Andre Drummond personally. And so he's gone. Tayshaun Prince, who they picked up after he was put on waivers after the Jeff Green trade, he's off to Minnesota. And then Caron Butler, who I still don't know why they even signed him, he's now with the Sacramento Kings. The additions that they made, they got Ersan Ilyasova in a trade. They also, in a trade, picked up Marcus Morris, but not Markeith, even though that's caused a bit of a problem with Markeith in Phoenix, but we'll get to them later. They signed up Steve Blake, a good veteran point guard. They signed Aaron Baines to, like, a 2-year deal that I just never understood. And then they drafted Darren Hilliard, and they also drafted in the lottery Stanley Johnson, who looked awesome in summer league. I think he's going to start.
If he's not starting opening day, he should be very soon.
It's either him or Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, who I said last year was going to improve, and it seemed like he was, and then he kind of slipped backwards again.
Yeah, he just doesn't seem like anything that's special. Mm-hmm. Like, he's going to turn the corner. This is his time, and I'm like, he's just one of their dime a dozen player.
Now, you see the Stan Van Gundy imprint there already. You know, three-pointers made, they were ninth. And Detroit has never been a three-point shooting team. So you could already see that it's turning around. He's had great rebounding teams in Orlando. They were fourth in rebounding. They were second as a team in offensive rebounding. That is due almost all in part because of Andre Drummond being a rebounding machine. Block shots, the same, 13th. They didn't turn the ball over a lot, but they don't get to the free throw line a lot, and they're terrible at the line because Drummond is like a career 40% free throw shooter. What can they improve on, though? It's obvious that they're trying to do the three ball. They're trying to play Stan Van Gundy ball. But what is it that they can do to try to push forward?
Just wait another season to do something. They're, you know, you're slowly moving the dial, but you're not gonna. Like I said, there's a lot of pieces they need to move around.
Well, their centerpiece, obviously, is Drummond.
But is Drummond. They're going to, yeah, he'll get re-signed to a max deal.
Yeah, it hasn't happened yet, but I would assume that they're going to get something done either before training camp or right around that time. I think it's just a matter of time for that, unless the agent wants to hold off negotiations until next summer if they can't agree on max level and, you know, wait for the new cap to be set. But the problem with Drummond and why he can't be compared with a guy like Davis is that Davis, you can do a lot of different things. You could try to expand the skills as like a mid-range shooter and a three-point shooter and attacking the basket. Andre, I think Andre, in a way, kind of like Dwight Howard, he kind of is what he is. You know, he's a big man in the middle. He's gonna try to draw fouls by attacking, by, you know, getting put back dunks. He's a great rebounder. He's a good shot blocker. But after that, you really can't do much else with him. And that's okay, because you can still use all of those skills to create an elite center, which is very rare in the NBA.
Yeah, but, you know, it's, I don't know. In a way, he is sort of a square hole, round peg situation. Because, yeah, your most dominant guy is this center, but you're a three-point shooting team.
There's such a thing as a square hole.
Same potato, potato.
Do you think we're going to see a lot of Spencer Dinwiddie again? Because if that's the case, then I think that team's in trouble. That means that either Jennings isn't coming along as quickly as we thought, or Reggie Jackson's not playing well.
Well, as a backup point guard, he's not terrible. Mm-hmm. It's just he was forced in the role of being the starter. It's like, okay, well, yeah, now there's nothing much you could do. You know, he was coming off an ACL injury last year, slipped to the second round because of it.
Was Ersan Ilyasova just a clear, we want a shooter for Stan move?
That was just a clear Milwaukee needed to get rid of him as fast as possible. And it's like, okay, we'll take him. Mm-hmm. He's battled injuries and irrelevancy. He tends to just disappear for long stretches, but mm-hmm. You know, if you look at his numbers are deceptively good.
He's a good percentage shooter, but he had a really rough year last year. So, well, I'm not sure what he's going to be able to follow up with. I mean, he's a little older too. I think he just reached his 30s, right?
He's been in the league for a while now.
Yeah, he's come out of Turkey. So we'll see what he can offer. But I just don't. I mean, it's the same story with the Nets. I just don't see a lot here. You know, I like Stan. You know, I think he was a little ahead of his time with the 3-point shooting. But I just don't think he's got the pieces in place yet. I think he's a year away. I do say keep an eye out for Stanley Johnson. I think the rookie out of Arizona. I think he's gonna really break out. I would not be surprised if you saw his name on Rookie of the Month charts every now and then.
Yep, you are quite a proponent of his.
I like him. I like him. He's got the size of an NBA small forward, but he can get up. And he shot the ball really well. He was a leader on the floor at Summer League. Take it for what it's worth. But I think he's one of those guys who can come in and say, I will lead this team. I'm going to be the man. He's got that kind of attitude, and I like that. Moving on, and we're going to be talking about a team in the Atlantic Division, and that is the Charlotte Hornets. Going into last season, I liked them a lot more than you did, and it turned out you turned out to be right. Because they just had a really, really rough one. They went 33-49. Their offense was garbage. Al Jefferson got hurt at the end of the year, which really ruined their chances of trying to get that last playoff spot. Kemba Walker had a knee injury, too. And now Lance Stephenson is gone after really kind of playing his way out. You know, he had a 3-year deal, but he had a player option or a team option after year three. So he was an easy player to move. Were you surprised with the disappointment from Lance?
No, because it was one of those, yes, you need to take a chance, but he never looked like a guy who could be the number one option, the go-to guy. And they desperately, the team needed a leader. They're like, okay, Lance, it's your team. He's like, I'm just a kid. This, you know, I don't know how to lead a team. And then fell into a funk, and then the coaches got angry with him, and then, you know, he's quickly just riding the bench.
We talked about Charlotte a lot, kind of being a team that sort of stays steady. I always made fun of how Gerald Henderson was there every year. Well, now they've actually made – this is one of the first years where they really made a ton of moves in the offseason, Michael Jordan and, you know, his brass over there. Lance Stephenson got traded to the Clippers. They let Mo Williams – they got Mo Williams in a trade with Minnesota involving Gary Neal, and then they let him go. And he signed with the Cavaliers. Gerald Henderson got traded to the Blazers along with Noah Vonleh, who they gave up on after year one. And then they let Bismack Biyombo walk. Jason Maxiell is gone. Jeffrey Taylor is out at Real Madrid. After that, you know, I mean, he was kind of on hot water anyway after that domestic incident that he had. And he didn't really play that great after he came off the suspension anyway. So he had sort of, like, written his own death sentence in a way. So they have a lot of additions here. Some of them I like, and then some of them really are head-scratchers. Which ones is the biggest head-scratcher for you?
They paid a lot of money to be a really bad team. They, you know, re-upping Kid Gilchrist, that's fine, and Walker.
I hated that deal. I hated that deal.
Really? But you love those two players so much.
I liked him when he was at Kentucky. I thought he was great for college. NBA, he's a skinny, small forward who can't shoot. His defensive efficiency is fine. The analytics have proven that. He's got no upper body strength. He's shown no proof that he's going to develop as an offensive player. He needs to pick up his rebounding if he wants to find a niche. But since he just inked this deal where he gets over like $13 million, I just don't understand it. I don't think he was even worth... I don't know if he was worth half that.
Yep, you got me to pay... You know, Batum is not going to be cheap.
And you know what's funny about that? Batum and Kid Gilchrist are kind of in the same role. So what do you do with Kid Gilchrist after inking him for this money? You want to prove to Batum that you want him here because he's in the last year of his contract. So what are you going to do? You're going to just play Batum a lot and sit Kid Gilchrist and have him be a six-man?
Yeah, it's really, you know, you inherited Spencer Hawes' horrible deal. Mm-hmm. Jeremy Lin, okay, that's just because you have no, you know.
They got two Jeremys, Jeremy Lin and Jeremy Lamb.
Jeremy Lamb, I'm still waiting for him to do something. Mm-hmm. Anything.
But don't say that to Chris Criscolo. He loves that man from his UConn days.
You know, Aaron, you got one of the Harrison twins, which makes you happy.
Aaron? Nah. I never thought he was worth a crap.
You know, you spend all this time, okay, we drafted Gerald Henderson, didn't do anything. Noah Vonleh, all right, we're just going to give up on him for Batum? Strange. You spent a top 10 pick on Biombo, let him go. It's just like, okay, so what have you done? How are you getting better?
Yeah.
If you're just going to trade, you know, okay, you played your 4 years, you're no good.
Cody Zeller, he improved slightly as his second season, but I don't know what he's really can top out at. We've already had quite a few laughs of Marvin Williams. He's in the last year of his deal. PJ Harrison got arrested again, so we don't know where his status is. Frank Kaminsky, I love Frank Kaminsky in college. Do you think he can? And he looked good in summer league. Do you think he'll be able to provide?
I don't see where he's good at all, or how he will translate into the NBA.
Great, he's a 6'11" guy who can shoot threes.
Yeah, but he's slow.
He's got a spin move.
He's slow, so how are you going to hide him on defense?
That's a problem. And this is a team, you know, coached by Clifford, and they – not the dog Clifford. I think his name is Steve Clifford. But they're a defensively minded team for sure. You know, they their points allowed was 7th. You know, they do like to protect the ball. They were first in turnovers, but that means that you don't take any chances. You know, their shot blocking was 7th, but with Biombo gone, we don't know where that's going to be. Rebounds per game was at 10th, but Al Jefferson is really slowing down.
Yeah, the minutes and the injuries have caught up with him. And, you know, we're all waiting for that his legs to just fall off, and we might be at that point already. And, mm-hmm. You know, it's sort of sad how quick they... You know, how young he is to fall apart. But, yeah, you forget, oh, he's already been in the league for 12 years.
Yeah, 2 knee injuries, too, I believe.
Knees, and he always had ankle problems and back problems. And...
Their offense was so pitiful. They were third to last in points per game. They were second to last in field goal percentage. They were dead last in three-pointer percentage. They were last in steals. They were second to last in assists. They don't play fast. They don't get a lot of offensive rebounds, which means they're very stagnant on offense. That is obviously where the improvement is, and that's why I think the addition of guys like Kaminsky and Batum, who look pretty inspired in Eurobasket for France, we'll see if that translates in the regular season. I think that's where they can really help them. Do you think that we'll be able to see some of those numbers go up offensively?
No, I really don't see how. You know, the more you get, okay, the more points you're getting offensively with Kaminsky, the more you're going to give up on defense due to his liability. And, you know, Batum, okay, that's great. You're going to play him and Gilchrist together? Mm-hmm. that's not, you know, you're not yet becoming a Memphis. Who's going to score some points on your team?
Is Jeremy Lin a suitable backup for Kemba Walker? Do you think that's a good combination? That's a small lineup there.
It's a small lineup, but it's backups. Backups are usually smaller.
Yeah, but the second Kemba Walker's small, you know?
Yeah, but it could be as small as you want as long as you have good wing defender behind you. Mm-hmm. Like a Gilchrist. Yeah, it makes up for your shortcomings.
Yeah. You know, they might be on to something a little bit.
Maybe a little bit, but again, they spent a lot of money to be completely mediocre. They're no way challenging for a championship anytime soon with that roster. And
well, no. I don't think they're even vying for a playoff spot right now. I think they took a big step backwards.
Yeah, but they spent a lot of money to go backwards, which is the strange part. They didn't just, you know, get decimated like some other teams. They willingly went out and said, okay, we want these people to be this bad.
Congratulations, Michael Jordan. You just spent a lot of money to have a really, really mediocre, forgettable team.
Congratulations. You got a new TV deal. You're even richer now.
And now we're going to go to the Western Conference. And these are actually two teams that we decided on in the outsiders category from the same division, and that's in the Northwest Division. One of them is a little bit of a surprise if you were watching last season and you haven't really been keeping track of the offseason moves, and that's the first one we're going to hit on is the Portland Trail Blazers. Why are the Portland Trail Blazers on this list?
Because their team got picked apart systematically. It was just like everybody came in and just pillaged them.
Have you seen the meme where Damian Lillard has all his teammates and it shows them all wearing their new jerseys?
It's his team now.
Well, he got the mega deal, but let's be serious. He was worth the deal. He was worth that max extension.
Yeah, he was worth
it. He was five for 120, am I right?
Something like that. Was he worth that max extension if it caused your entire team to implode?
I don't think it caused it, though.
It didn't cause it, but it's one of those. There's no direct correlation, but both things happened. Therefore, both things need to be addressed.
Okay. Now, we're going to be talking about the mass exodus, but let's get to the details. LaMarcus Aldridge, who had been Willie or won't he for a couple of years, he wound up leaving, and he's now with the San Antonio Spurs. Wesley Matthews, after tearing his Achilles, he's now with the Dallas Mavericks, got a little more money than people expected. They traded Batum to the Hornets, and they got Gerald Henderson and Noah Vonleh in return, like we had just talked about. Aaron Aflalo, who they had picked up in the trade deadline, he's off, and he went to the New York Knicks. Robin Lopez followed him to New York. Steve Blake, who was the backup point guard, is now with the Pistons. They also let loose Darrell Wright, Victor Claver, and Joel Freeland. Tons of additions. Oh my goodness. Gerald Henderson at small forward. Al-Farouq Aminu, who is sort of like a defensive guy for the Dallas Mavericks at the 3 and 4 spot. Plumlee, Vonleh. They picked up Mike Miller off of when the Cavaliers let him go so that they could save some cap space. Ed Davis, they signed away from the Lakers. They got Mo Harkless in a trade with the Magic. They drafted Pat Connaughton and Luis Montero and Cliff Alexander, who they picked up after being an undrafted free agent. They also signed over Phil Pressey, I would assume to be the backup behind Damian Lillard and C.J. McCollum. On paper, this looks like a really awful team. I'm not going to lie to you.
On paper, it's a Gerald Henderson, Aminu, Mike Miller, Harkless.
Myers Leonard.
No, not Myers. I'm saying all those are just small forwards. You have now a complete gut at the three of players who can't really play anything else.
Yeah, because they're all bigger. They're all bigger threes.
You know? Yeah, Aminu can play a small four, but for the most part.
Gerald Henderson's going to have to play small forward. He has no choice.
He can't. He's not a two. He's not a four. It's just you're stuck with him there. Who and he's done nothing to this point. They take steps down every which way. We have less than enough. Okay, we let him go. Well, we still got a Aflalo who was his backup. Nope. Now, who's left? Oh, we got Gerald Henderson. They overpaid for Aminu. Plumlee, you like to replace Lopez? Still major downgrade.
Well, defensively, it's a downgrade, but offensively, it's an upgrade.
Mo Harkless, we're still waiting to enter the league. This can he do anything? Well, we don't know.
He's been MIA, Harkless.
He's been there 3 years, and we're still waiting for him to do anything. Ed Davis was obviously a great signing, which was strange.
Yeah, but is he going to play, you know, when Myers Leonard and Chris Kamen are in front of him? You know, that's the problem. Is he going to play immediately?
Oh, he should start.
Because there's going to be this obsession, too, that, oh, well, we need to develop Vonleh, so we need to give him more minutes.
Yeah, but Vonleh's not ready to start. He'll get his minutes, but you're not going to put him out at the beginning of the game.
Do you think there'll be a beneficiary from what it felt like Charlotte kind of panicked and just cut him loose before he could really blossom?
I think that was just Charlotte saying, we like Batum and we need him for our team. Because their decisions were very focused and very, you know, they didn't poach him, and it wasn't a, we'll give you all of this just to dump our guys.
And the sad part about Portland is that you could kind of see it coming before last season even ended because of the injuries and because of how butchered they got at the once they reached the playoffs. They were 51-31, and they got that fourth seed, but they just... they couldn't really go anywhere. It seemed like Lillard was in a bit of a funk. Aldridge was efficient like he always is, but it seemed like he was kind of in sleep mode, while the Grizzlies were just kind of ready to push him aside. It was a little depressing because you knew it was something was that there was big changes coming around for Portland, but nobody really expected it to come as quickly as it did, except for us.
Yeah, but you know, once Aldridge goes, you know your team is pretty much done, so you might as well just leave too.
Yeah, I that was a big part of it. Like, if Aldridge had stayed, maybe they would have made a little more effort to try to keep the rest of them.
Well, we kept an effort over, you know, pay him a little, but then, you know, you give your money to Aminu, who signed, like, he was one of the first signings of free agency.
Yeah, he was like, he was one of the Midnight Boys. He was one of those guys where they signed it immediately, and it was like,
It's like, but what are you going to do with, okay, I guess you're letting everybody walk then if you're replacing with him. And it's just, you know, okay, good luck, Lillard. You got your cash, now your team's garbage.
I'll throw you out some of the team stats from last year, but they kind of feel like an anachronism. They were 9th in points per game. They were 6th in three-pointers made, 8th in three-pointer percentage. They were 1st in free throw percentage for the last couple of years. Assists, they were 12th. Rebounds, they were 2nd. They were 12th in points allowed. They played pretty quickly under Terry Stotts. Offensively, they've always been pretty efficient. The only thing they were really bad at was getting to the free throw line, free throws made. But I got to throw all these out of the window because this is such a new team. Even though Lillard's there, McCollum is still there. Everything else is a complete overhaul. So what do you expect?
Nothing much from this team.
But, like, in terms of style, a Lillard kind of like an Iverson type where Lillard's sort of the ball hog?
He's good at all. Yeah, if you meant ball hog. But I'm like, he's going to be a ball hog. Aminu's an offensive liability. You're not going to get much from, Vonleh or Plumlee to start off. They're not offensive.
McCollum really played well in the playoffs when Lillard was in a funk. So do you? I know people kind of criticize the idea that Lillard and McCollum at their size would play, you know, alongside each other in the backcourt in the NBA, but it kind of works.
It kind of works if you want to sort of. But then you have Gerald Henderson just sitting there. He can't get rid of at the three. So I don't know. The team needs to find an identity because, like I said, okay, you have Lillard who has his style, but doesn't really fit Henderson, and the new guys don't have a style yet, so it's just sort of a let's take a year off, see who we got here.
More like two. And it sucks because they were really bad the year that they drafted Lillard. Lillard was one rookie of the year, but they were bad. You know, they lost their last, like, 13 games. And then they had a complete turnaround the following season with Aldridge there and Lopez there and Wes Matthews there. And now it feels like, you know, Lillard's got to start all over again in a weird way. Even though he got paid and great for him, I kind of feel bad for him.
No, because that's what he wanted. He wanted the money over the team. And, you know, it's Aldridge's team, blah, blah, blah. Where's my team? Okay.
Well, you're really burying Lillard here.
I'm not burying him. I'm just saying this is be careful for what you want. If you want that contract, you want to be the man, this is what happened in 1 year when the man left, and now all of a sudden you're the guy. You know, okay, go leave him, just have stories of the old days ready.
They were 51 and 31. Do you think it's fair to say that it'll that if we flip the numbers, that'll be about right?
Or... That's about right, 31 and 51.
Pretty close, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, now we're going to stay in the Northwest Division, and this team was 30 and 52. So for them to be predicted in this slot is kind of like a ho-hum, I guess. But the Denver Nuggets have a new coach in Mike Malone, who had been, everybody agrees, unfairly fired in Sacramento. Now he's back with Pete D'Alessandro, you know, who was also the GM in Sacramento before he left in the summer. And so they're going to try to redo the team in Denver, even though they still have, weirdly, a lot of the pieces still in place, save for one.
Denver is sort of a mystery. They were the X-Factor team last year. What could they do? Because on paper, the team looks good.
Yeah, but how long can you be an X-Factor before people say, okay, this team's not going anywhere. We need to stop putting our gold in this chest.
Well, you know, since they got rid of Ty Lawson and drafted Moutier. Okay, yeah, now we know we're now in a project. We're going to let him learn and take his bumps. Mm-hmm. But you have Gallinari, who looked great for the Eurobasket, and then...
And he had some moments in the regular season where he scored 40 or more, where he kind of shined for a second, even though he was slow to recover from the knee problems.
He was slow to recover. You have Fareed, who was just in the wrong system. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, he was just, like the rest of the team, just driven out by the coach of the, you know, unable to connect with each other.
Mm-hmm. Brian Shaw.
And you got Mozgov, and they brought another European guy in. Is it Jeffrey LeBurn, or is it a...
Yeah, you know, it was funny because in the summer, everyone was criticizing the Nuggets for not making moves because it was so obvious that they needed to do something. Now, here's what happens. They draft Emmanuel Moutier, who was going to go to SMU. He was a top point guard prospect at a high school. His grades didn't cut the mustard, so he went off and he did the Brandon Jennings route. Now, Brandon Jennings didn't play in China. He played, I believe, in Spain or Europe.
Italy.
But Moutier played in China. There really wasn't enough tape on him to get a good feel of how he played, and he had an injury. He goes to the NBA draft. He gets picked by the Nuggets, you know, in the lottery. In the summer league, he didn't shoot the ball well, but he looked like an NBA point guard. And I think that the brass in Denver started to get the idea of, you know, maybe we can move Lawson if we have the right time, even if it means having to build Moutier from the ground up, because we think we have just enough here with Moutier to build the team and have something decent his rookie season. Then Lawson got the DUI. He became media poison, and so they had to get rid of him, and they dumped him in a trade with the Houston Rockets, and they got in return guys like Kostas Papanikolaou and Nick Johnson, who I think can help them out. I thought Papanikolaou was a pretty
good player. He just got cut. He got released.
Papanikolaou got released?
Yeah.
Oh, he was on non-guaranteed money, wasn't he?
Yeah, they just got rid of Lawson for nothing, it looks like, now.
That's a big surprise to me. That really is.
Well, that just shows how much of a cancer in the locker room you are.
Well, is Johnson still there?
He might be the one.
He got some minutes in Houston. He would be like the defensive two guard.
Yeah, I think he might still be around.
But all the other pieces are still in place, like we were talking about. They re-signed Wilson Chandler to do another 3 or 4 years, which I could not believe. Kenneth Fareed is there. He was the leading scorer. Danilo Gallinari, J.J. Hickson, Joseph Nurkic, who we both like. Randy Foy's in the last year of his deal. They brought back Will Barton. Gary Harris had a forgettable rookie year. Jameer Nelson's back. LaVerne is back. Daryl Arthur is back. The only other additions they really had was Nikola Jokic, who was a stud in EuroLeague, and a lot of people like him. So him along with Joseph Nurkic, I think people are going to like that combination of Euro forward. So we'll see what they offer there. But the real question there is, what can Moutier do replacing Lawson? Because Lawson was such an important part to that team, even though in the locker room he was probably a cancer.
Well, it's okay, we know we have a rebuilding project, but how fast can we rebuild with the team we have? Mm-hmm. We have our coach now, we have our vision again. let's go back, you know, let's go back to running and let's see how, because like this team might be ahead of the curve in all these other projects just based on the talent alone of people. Again, that's what we said last year.
I think they're kind of right on line with Detroit in that comparison, because I think the Hornets and the Blazers and the Nets are sort of falling back, whereas I feel like the Pistons and the Nuggets are inching forward. Just
well, the Pistons have a vision. Whatever it is, that's what I mean, you don't know it, but they have it. Denver just sort of lucked into this roster.
Yeah. I have to apologize, too. I said that Fareed was one of the leading scorers. No, he was one of the leading rebounders. He had 8.9 rebounds a game. So he is vital to that team, even though he didn't seem to come alive until like the end of the year after Shaw got fired. Do you think that was a coincidence?
Well, that's exactly what happened. Also, the coach was fired. Oh, he's back to an explosive player we saw before he you know, signed his deal. We've seen that why he made the Olympic team. He's back to being trying again.
We didn't really see a style of play long enough with Michael Malone to really figure out what he wants to do. What do you expect?
I don't know what he wants to do. I said they're going to go back to running, which that sort of looked like what he wanted to do. Mm-hmm. But who knows?
I mean, he centralized the offense around Cousins, you know, at the early in that season. And they had some success. Then they fell back, and Renaday just fired him out of nowhere, you know, just blew him out, said, okay, bye. And obviously Cousins was disappointed. So maybe Malone has this ability, even though he's a little tough on his players because he had no problem ripping them in press conferences, I think he had this ability to kind of, like, have, like, a good relationship with some of the star players. Do you think he'll be able to establish that early with somebody like a Fareed? Or maybe even Moutier, if Moutier breaks out?
You should be able to, you know, because for the most part, he kept Bogey under check. So, there's no reason the players don't, you know, the problem was between him and management, not him, the players. Mm-hmm. The players didn't quit on him at all. The players quit after he got fired. Mm-hmm. But it's, it's one of those, okay, now it's a second chance. You're on a new team. I learned what I shouldn't do with the, you know, from this first time. Mm-hmm. So, he should be a lot smarter now.
I just don't know what this team, because it really is the same team that that Brian Shaw had when he was trying to turn into a defensive ball club, but they obviously wanted to push the ball. I don't know if Malone is the kind of coach that's going to tell him, hey, just go have fun, guys. So I don't – the one benefit they have is there is movement in the Northwest Division because of teams like Minnesota and Utah and Portland all kind of being in the mediocre range, and the only one being really at an elite level there is Oklahoma City. But now that whole divisional standing seeding thing is out of the way after Adam Silver changed the rules, it really doesn't matter anymore. You've got to be able to garner up enough wins to at least be in the top eight, and that's just not going to happen.
No, not this year.
Do you see anything here for Moutier? Do you think he could be that kind of player? Or do you think there's just a whole lot of hype surrounding nothing?
No, he seems like one of the you don't need a scoring point guard all the time. Mm-hmm. Sometimes your best point guard could just be the one who will make that pass to give you the easy bucket, to make everyone else around him better. You don't need that. You don't need the Allen Iverson, I'm going to go score 35 points. I don't care who's on my team.
Yeah, well, that's the only spot where they don't really have depth. If you look at all the other positions, they do have decent depth. You know, at small forward, you got Chandler and Gallinari and Gary Harris. And then at power forward, you have, you know, Kenneth Fareed. And you have LaVerne and Daryl Arthur. And then at center, you got Jozef Nurkic and Jokic. Like, you got actually a lot of players that you can throw at teams. But they just don't have they didn't have the system in place. They weren't motivated enough. And their style of play was just, they could not figure one out. So it's hard to say. We talked about it. What was their record at? It was at 30-52. I think they'll do a little better than that. Would you agree?
Definitely hope so.
What's that?
Definitely hope so.
Okay, so now we're going to be, now that we're at the end of these five, we're going to do our rankings here and see if we can kind of get as close to, a consensus as possible as we go from 25 to 21 here. Adam, you go first. I want you to go, from the worst to the first here on these five here for the outsider category.
Oh, Charlotte.
Charlotte's the worst of the five. So the number 25 you would say is Charlotte.
I'd say they're a solid 25.
They're a solid 25. I would agree there. I think the Hornets are 25th in this range. 24. I'll start first. I'll go with the Nets.
See, I disagree. I think they have, especially in the East, you have a talent for
Clippers. You just like these New York teams. You did this in the last episode with the Knicks.
Well, Carmelo is still an elite player.
Yeah, but it doesn't mean the team's going to be good. I've seen great players on shitty teams.
Yeah.
But so if you don't like the Nets here, who do you like at 24 here?
Portland.
The Blazers.
I think the Blazers.
I think Lillard is just enough.
Lillard is enough, but then just there's literally nobody next to him.
True.
There's no second option on that team right now.
So 23rd, are you flip flopping here and you say the Nets?
Yeah, I'd put the Nets 23rd. 22 because you like the Pistons.
No, I like the Blazers here at 23. 22, I say Denver.
You think the Pistons are the best of this bunch?
Yes.
Okay.
I think the Pistons have more pieces than the other teams do, is really what I... And I feel like they have a better idea of what they want to do.
You know? I just don't know what they... I don't see this vision. They're just all mismatched players who are overpaid. Everybody they've got, you need to overpay to come to your shitty situation.
You think they're overpaid now? Wait till Drummond gets his money. And then they're really trying to, like, squeeze the cap to try to find, you know, a nice, like, sweet little deal where they don't...
Look, if Jackson and Drummond can get this pick-and-roll two-man game going,
uh-huh.
It doesn't matter what your system is. You've got these two guys who are now...
To tease the next episode, that's a long shot. But so you say the Nuggets are the best of the bunch here. Okay. So we're close. I said mine is 25, Charlotte 24, Brooklyn 23, Portland 22, Denver, and then I feel like 21 the best here is Detroit. You feel like 25, Charlotte 24, the Portland Trail Blazers 23, Brooklyn 22, the Pistons, and then 21 the Nuggets. So it's just a flip flop of those. 21 and 22 and 23.
Okay, we both agree Charlotte's terrible.
bold prediction. You can give me more than one if you would like out of this group. And give me one bold prediction.
Bold prediction. Fareed gets back to his all-star form.
Okay. This is Al Jefferson's last season in the NBA. I think he retires.
I would have said it's a bold prediction, but look, Kendrick Perkins is still on a roster. He's just gonna bounce around and.
Well, that's why. But that's why it's a bold prediction because
he'll take a $1 million veteran minimum and play 10 minutes somewhere.
I'll throw one more in. Stanley Johnson will win Rookie of the Year.
No, he'll be first team, but he won't. I don't think he'll win Rookie of the Year. Okay, one more bold prediction.
And we're just gonna go throwing bold predictions at each other.
Detroit makes a big trade with all their incentives.
With who?
I don't know. They're gonna try to get a third all-star, I think. Hmm. A third young guy.
So Stan Van Gundy goes for a big move. Yeah, he ain't prone to that. Remember when he did the Gilbert Arenas Jason Richardson thing?
He's not prone to it, but he's, you know, making it's a lot. It's different now. I think
Is that one of the worst trades ever? When they traded Rashard Lewis and Vince Carter for Gilbert and Richardson?
No, because what did Rashard Lewis really do?
Well, he was close to done there. That's a good point.
That's what I'm saying. That's
Vince Carter had a little bit left, and he was unhappy in Phoenix. He did not want to go to Phoenix.
You know, that's the thing is they did that. Yes, it's a bad trip because nobody really won there. But you can see Van Gundy, who would have, you know, he traded for Jackson. I wouldn't have sort of expected that. Then give him that huge deal.
Yeah, but if they make the move, you know, if Johnson or Caldwell Pope really shine, I mean, is that going to be one of the bargaining chips? You know, try to get a really good small forward, try to get a really good, you know, two guard. I mean, what do you do there? You know. You already let go of your power forward. You obviously admitted that your star power forward couldn't work out. So who's going to go there?
somebody who's already disgruntled with their current situation.
Yeah.
Somebody who got buried who thinks they should be some young player.
A misfit toy, yeah.
Exactly.
Or a misfit superstar, which is just quite a few of those. So we're going to be continuing on with our next series, but I hope everybody enjoyed. I know we had a little bit of technical difficulties in the previous week, so I'm sorry that we had to blank out for that 1 week, but we're making up for it as we go along.
It was a little summer hangover. We were a little yeah. Skippy in summer, and we just sort of kept it going.
I may have passed out from watching Leonard Fournette the last 2 weeks, but I cannot confirm nor deny that. But I could say that I was catatonic after watching some of the performances. That's our shared experience.
Agreed.
And no Luke McCown mentions, please.
I'll see you next week for the preview.
All right, everybody, take care. Please keep doing it.